This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck? Was that his
Lizmark.
Name? Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast, coming at you live here on this Wednesday evening. Again, the fall is here. We've got football, Halloween's on the way, fall beers, pumpkin, chill in the air. Scott, it's my favorite time of the year. How about you?
Two words. Pumpkin head. Tap.
No more Criscola Grundle sweat. Everything's cool now.
JR, pleasure as always. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 333. Play the numbers. 333 of the Place to Be Podcast. And yeah, already starting to see the pumpkin beers sneaking into liquor stores and beverage stores around. And of course, for us Connecticut residents, JR's already experienced it in June, I think it was. But on October 6th, you'll get the delicious Yuengling from Pennsylvania. I'm very excited. So, kind of a sad day today, JR, in many ways.
Yeah.
You know? Obviously, big wrestling news, sad wrestling news, and a very sentimental episode tonight based on our guest.
I guess. I mean, not really. He's not really going anywhere. So going to deal with it. I mean, for you, I guess. But I guess, why don't we just bring him in so we can just get this dog and pony show started? Of course, okay. Our guest making his, 17th? Appearance?
This is his 17th appearance.
League-leading 17th appearance, I think. Probably the most of any guest here besides you and me. And that is, of course, the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly. Kevin, welcome back.
Thank you very much for that very warm greeting. And I'm looking forward to the day that my 3X jersey is retired in the Place to Be Nation Hall of Fame.
It already is.
However,
your goatee is not, though.
Now that I have the idea of Scott's Grundle sweat burned deep into my subconscious, I may never, ever sleep again. So thank you for that.
We're going to have a bronze statue of your cat and a bag of Oreos just for you.
and your goatee frozen in time from 1999.
Yes, evil. It was never a goatee. It was a Fu Manchu, I'll have you know.
I watched it last night, and it was glory. It was on, I think, Countdown had you had an interview. You interview in The Rock or something or other. Or no, it was Mick Foley. It was in the Attitude Era thing. So.
Oh. What do you know? I got to interview somebody besides The Rock.
Classic Kevin.
Somebody not calling you Hermie.
Yeah, right.
So for those of you who may be new to the show, Kevin started joining us when we were in 1996 in the Vintage Vaults. Since then, he's come on twice for each calendar year, talked about what's going on in the Federation behind the scenes, news and notes. Sometimes he'll answer truthfully. Sometimes he'll make shit up because he doesn't remember
it. Sure.
but we are all the way here to 2003. And Kevin, It's been quite a run. Like Scott mentioned, you've been on 16 times before this. It spawned a wonderful friendship. It spawned your own podcast here at PlaceToBeNation.com. And all because you ignored my stalker tweet and then John Walters went to bat for me and you gave us a chance and now look at us.
Well, it's, you know, listen, I blame John Walters for a lot of things. But again, you know, this is one thing I can't blame him for. It's actually been good. I would continue to come on this show, but they fired me in March of 2003, right at the end. In fact, the day of the shock and awe campaign at the beginning of the Iraq War. So that was a good time to be unemployed, and therefore I can no longer talk about anything in terms of the WWE of being there because they said, we don't want you here.
Now, we can talk like ECWA or whatever that was, the promotion you were in there for a bit, weren't you doing something with them?
I had been there. When was I there? It was like 2000 to like 2002. So I was already done there. I had caused enough trouble and havoc in poor Jim Kettner. I put all the gray hair on his head. But yeah, I was by this point now, I don't know what I was doing. I was pretty much by, let's say, September of 2003. I was really trying to figure out what the heck I was going to do next in my life.
So what is your, I mean, your forte, your favorite wrestling era is what, like 80s and early 90s NWA?
84 to 87, 80, well, 88. Jim Crockett Promotions was my favorite.
So maybe we should
Absolute favorite.
Maybe we should do is task you, watch a couple of those old shows, and you come on and we talk about them. How about we do that? I can keep you in the flow here. You watch
yeah,
sure. Starrcade 84, you come on and we talk about it.
Yeah, I got to watch, I got to get the network. That's my problem.
Well, you should get it, or we'll just give you Criscolo's login. You log in as him, and you watch old WCW stuff.
Okay, I could do that.
We'll give you the Place to Be Nation family account that we have going on.
There you go.
I'll just talk about the, you know, the greatest finish of all time, which everybody hates, but I love, is the Dusty finish.
The Joe Frazier, oh, you mean the Dusty finish in 85? Or the Joe Frazier stopped the match in 84.
No, the Dusty finish, meaning where...
Oh, in general. Okay.
Referee gets bumped, throw the guy over the top rope, second referee comes in, babyface on top, one, two, three. First referee gets up and says, uh-uh, you bumped into me, and it's a disqualification, reverse the decision.
Right. No, you're talking about the general term. I thought there was a specific, because like Starrcade 84, you had the Joe Frazier bleeding thing, and then 85, you had the legit one.
I know.
When I almost said Gary Young. He was that hump in Devastation Incorporated. Tommy Young peeked his head over the Vince-ish from WrestleMania 19 and saw Arn fall over the top rope.
It's funny because Scott likes the term Dusty Finish because that's what Triple H calls it when they're about to
God. You're going to miss those, aren't
here
you?
Here we go, Criscolo. Time for the Dusty Finish.
Oh, don't fake it.
Clean your floor next time. It wouldn't be as dusty. Kev, so we have a couple topics we want to talk on, and we'll do that. And then why don't we announce your guest for the next week? I think it'll be a good one.
Yeah, for the Kevin Kelly Show, the guest next week.
Wow, hang on. Let's tease it. Let's tease it.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about some topics first. We'll do that. We'll go to take a break, and then we'll start 2003. So a couple hot news items we wanted to discuss with you while you're here with us, and then we can cover them again next week. But two Ring of Honor and one just a general world of wrestling that's actually kind of timely considering what we're going to talk about tonight. So why don't we do that first? Tonight we're talking 2003, one of the kind of, fringy players of that year that had a lot of hype behind him and didn't quite materialize, Scott, as we talked about Monday night, Sean O'Hare. As soon as we were done bashing him on the podcast, we find out he had passed away. And today, sadly, we find out that he did hang himself. His father found him. There was a text message that came out about a month ago. I guess he had sent to his friend saying how everything in his life had failed and his life sucks. So it seemed like he was probably battling some depression for a while. Kevin, any memories of working with Sean or any thoughts on his passing?
Just, again, very sad for him and, for his family. And, you wish that there could be some help out there. I know there is. We just have to take advantage of it. In fact, I saw, of all people, and I think it was just coincidence, Lennox Lewis, I think, sent a tweet out today about mental health and there being phone numbers to call anywhere in the world. He put up a couple of them, but yeah, it's sad. And I don't know what drives people to that, but whatever it is, I hope those that might be also struggling or can get some help. I had very little interaction with Sean. Most of mine was, you know, very much just on the surface. Hi, how are you? How's things going? Didn't work with him closely like I had with some others. Always found him to be a great guy. Very neat individual as far as, like, you know, had a different perspective on things. Just an awesome look. And, again, just sad to hear the news, you know, that that he had taken his own life.
And we can talk about it later, I guess. Well, I guess we're going to talk about it later. We'll talk about it now. What did you think of that character he was supposed to have? Do you think they neutered him too quickly with it? They ended up putting him a Roddy Piper. Do you think it was something that wasn't going to translate in the ring? More, you know, more likely that it was just kind of prepackaged promos that worked so well with it?
Well, I always have hope for things like that, because to actually have a character idea make the air that was kind of his own was encouraging. And a lot of that, I think what I think Sean had come up with, at least the basis of it, and it certainly fit into his personality. That devil's advocate thing, I think it had a good opportunity for him to do something. Whether or not it would have translated into the ring, that's kind of on him, you know? And there was always sort of a disconnect between his skill set and what we actually saw in a professional wrestling ring. Then I know he had tried like some MMA type fighting after he was done in wrestling, you know, and I'm not even sure of the results, but I know he was like, he trained in like several other disciplines besides, you know, just learning how to be a professional wrestler.
Do you think the connection with Piper might have hurt him? I mean, look, Hot Rod's Hot Rod, but I felt like that was such a dark, very serious, very deep character. And Piper wasn't that kind of heel, even coming back in 03. Do you think maybe he was better off maybe on his own with a stable of you know, lower mid-carders? Or was the Piper thing, did that not even matter?
I think it's kind of on your perspective. What do you think is better? Is it better to be established by a name, or do you fear that you're going to get the new guy overshadowed by maybe a misfit in this regard? And I do agree with you that I think that Piper may have been miscast in that, but certainly his name recognition. It's one of the things that we remember Sean O'Hare most for. I think the two things you remember him the most for was this thing with Piper and then the Natural Born Killers, Thrillers, whatever they were called in WCW. Mm-hmm. And that was five new guys. And the Piper thing was with one of the most famous stars ever. So I think either way can work. Maybe it was that Piper was miscast. Again, a lot of the things that Vince sees, he sees for the first time when it airs on television. He really views life like he has a television screen attached to his face. And that's how he sees life. He doesn't see life out. Life comes into him, and that's how he sees it. So when he saw Piper and he saw Sean O'Hare, you have to wonder, did that influence the decision to pull the plug on that gimmick, you know, pretty quickly?
All right. So let's talk about just a couple of Ring of Honor stories that are really in the news right now. We have a lot of Ring of Honor fans here. Placement Nation had some questions for you. So, first, let's talk about our guest from last week on the Kevin Kelly Show. He hyped him up. He was ready for his big TV title match. And then he missed the show, Kevin. That's ACH. What happened with this guy?
What a dum-dum. Now, listen, I don't know whether or not he flaked or what. He missed his flight. And what happened? Let me ask you guys this. You've both flown before on an airplane, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say your flight is scheduled for 9 o'clock. And what happens if you miss that flight? What do you do?
Try and get on the next one.
JR, you agree?
Yes.
Okay.
So first I make a big scene, and then I try and go to the next
one. Yeah, if it's Delta Airlines, he starts kicking chairs.
Yes.
And then he'll ask for the next flight.
You flail your arms about. And
George Animal Steel style.
Kiss on the carpet.
Flip furniture, and then get rebooked.
Well, drops elbows, huh?
I'm not booked.
Not involved.
Dennis Stamp was not there. But for whatever reason, ACH didn't think it was, you know, he could go and get rebooked on another flight. I kid you not. Like, he sent an email realizing that he had missed his flight because he had a car service come and pick him up. He got like a cab or something, right? So he told the cab company the wrong time. So he realized that he was going to miss his flight. So he sent an email saying, I'm sorry I missed my flight. He couldn't have been more apologetic. And that he was going to reimburse the company for the plane ticket cost. And he hopes everybody could forgive him, but that he wasn't going to make the show. And, you know, when everybody got kind of off of their flight, this, you know, email comes across. And the first thing everybody's doing is texting or emailing him like, get on the next flight, get on the next flight. I tried to call him, went right to voicemail. I don't know if he knew that you could get on the next flight. I kid you not. So, and by the time it was finally, by the time they finally got a hold of him, he wouldn't have been able to get to Toronto before the show was over. So, thanks for coming. Or not coming in this case.
Because I'm not booked.
He was booked, though, Dennis.
You're not going to be here. Why aren't you going to be here? Please be here.
I'm not going to be here, Terry, because I'm not booked. That's an old rule. That's an old rule I've had for a long time.
Did he have a? Does ACH own any pink polo shirts?
No, well, not to my knowledge.
Does the C in ACH stand for cockroach?
Yeah. Did he have cockroaches on his tights?
According to Truth Martini, ACH stands for a crackhead. So there you go.
Because I'm not involved.
All right. So the second big hot ROH story out there right now surrounds Michael Elgin. Of course, he lost the world title to Jay Briscoe over the weekend. Now, rumor leaked that he wants to try a career in baseball. He was detained at the border, lost his visa. He's tweeting out or posting messages all apologetic and kind of cryptic. What do you know about the Elgin situation, Kev?
Well, I do know this, that Saturday, Jay Briscoe became a two-time Ring of Honor world champion. And Michael Elgin had a reign of just a couple months, and it came to an end. From there, tried to leave, got detained at the border, and I guess apparently was told that he can't go back into the United States for 90 days. Now, he's married to an American, and from what I understand, the paperwork that he had with him wasn't quite complete. Who was supposed to complete the paperwork? Was it him? Was it Ring of Honor? Whose hands was it in? That I don't know.
That Maybe I Jeff don't Jones? Know.
Maybe.
No, it's definitely not getting done.
But anyway, we need not digress. So anyway, it went from bad to worse. What a bad day, right? First of all, the baseball thing, not a big deal. If he wants to go and try and play baseball, if he wants to try out, he could probably do that on like a Tuesday morning.
Now, how old
you know
is
what I
he?
Mean? He's like 26.
An odd age to start playing baseball.
Well, he played in high school.
Yeah, okay.
And he played in college, I think. That's what he says.
Hmm.
I never seen him. You know, guys are throwing the ball around with him, like at Field of Honor. They said, yeah, he's got a decent arm, decent stick.
Well, sounds like a good pro prospect. 26-year-old guy, a little bit bulky. He's got a decent arm and a decent stick. It sounds good.
Mets need a second baseman.
Wilpon's there now. Already recruited him.
That's it. Freddie Coupons.
Well, he's got to do something. You see this allegations that are out?
Yeah, let's hope it makes him. No, it's not sexual harassment.
Oh, what is it?
He fired.
That's your
a
other
woman.
Owner. That's Jerry Jones. Scott's teams are doing very well lately.
No, I hope they follow these other teams and both sell. But the Wilpons allegedly fired a woman because she had a child out of wedlock.
Oh. Well, yes, they're very.
So. I hope this means that he sells a team and then the picture of Jerry Jones and with candy or Mystique or whatever the hell her name was. Hopefully that leads to him selling the team too.
Was he offering candy to Mystique? Is she underage, perhaps?
Only Maybe if she buys a ticket to WrestleMania 34 at the Taj Mahal or whatever.
I think they were at WrestleMania 19, the Catfight Girls. I was Hogan.
Hogan.
All right, so anything else on Elgin? That's it? What do we got?
No, I don't know what his future holds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for the next 90 days, he's parked in Canada. He can't do anything. So we'll see what happens then.
He's not his age is not on Wikipedia.
Kevin told you he's 26.
Well, he said he was maybe 26. I just wanted to confirm.
Wait, he's either 20. He's not much more than 26.
Wikipedia is stalking?
Yeah.
Why he That's can't creepy. Answer me on Wikipedia?
Let me ask you this: Could it get any better if Fred Wilpon was like dragged in the street and flogged, like the way they're dragging Ray Rice, who screwed up royally.
Dragged his wife through the streets.
Can
too?
We have Ray Rice punch Fred Wilpon in the face and knock him out?
I hope so.
Yeah, and then so drag his unconscious body out of the elevator.
I hope
and
so.
Then go back and pick up his shoes.
And then get Jerry Jones to do the same thing with his expensive shoes?
I don't care about Jerry Jones. I don't care about him at all.
Maybe you should. You should be looking for a new team after that disaster on Monday night.
I saw the pictures of the guy burning his Eli Manning jersey, and it's the first time where reactionary actions like that made me say, go, brother. It's time.
Not a pretty game.
Throw it in the fire. It's over.
Michael Elgin's not his real name? No, I'm just kidding.
No. Oh,
no, I know it's not his real name.
All right.
Okay.
All right, so there you go. There's your news of the day update. Of course, you get more of those trending stories and news updates at the Kevin Kelly Show. Kevin, so we have a big announcement. We have a really cool guest coming up next Wednesday, a week from tonight. And I say we cover that. We'll announce that right after we take a quick break here. We hear from our sponsors of Place to Be Nation. We'll come back and we'll talk about it. How's that sound?
That sounds like a fine, fine deal.
That sound dandy?
Mm-hmm.
Scott, that good with you?
Because...
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, or you better not miss it because I'm on it.
All right, Nation, we're back with me and Scott, of course, is the co-host of the Kevin Kelly Show podcast. Mm-hmm. And Kevin, I know you're probably sitting there tonight. You were watching Big Brother, texting with Jordan Duncan and Chad Campbell, the Big Brother trio there, all obsessed with the show. Can't get enough of it. A little dim, can't see, you're getting a little old. So you reach over and you have your inaugural Big Brother lava lamp from lavalovers.com. You flick that on and now your room turns in from a nerd den with Big Brother to a room that's cooler than shit. What are you doing, Kev? Is that lava lamp really to help your room? What do you think?
Well, listen, it would help me plan strategy. It would help improve my social game a great deal if I ever was on Big Brother. I would like to see the nice, you know, BB logo, maybe the head of Julie Chen floating in there somehow. It would all be good with me, you know, with Lava Lovers. That's all I would need.
So, Scott, now you're laying on the bed on the floor in there. You got WWE Network on, Best of Triple H, and you're like, oh, man, it's, you know, I got this Raw magazine here with these pictures of Triple H from 1990, and I can't really see. I'm getting old, too. Let me turn on my limited edition New Age Outlaws Lava Lamp, lavalovers.com. Even your apartment can look as cool as shit, Scott.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, the chicks come over. You want to set the mood. You get the figures and the belts on the wall. you flick on the lava lamp. You really set the mood.
Yep.
And then, then you realize it's not a chick. It's Anthony Armento, and you run away.
Oh, gosh.
But
a woman had had toupee? What?
Of course, lavalovers.com, the official sponsor of the Kevin Kelly Show Trending Topics segment. So, all right, Kev, speaking of the show, why don't you go ahead and lay it on us. Who is our guest this coming Wednesday night?
Well, our guest this coming Wednesday night is much like Lava Lovers. He's what's the saying? What's the slogan?
Cool as shit.
This would be the great way to describe my guest coming up this Wednesday. A legend in professional wrestling. A long, long in-ring career. And had a great run as one of the first. He wrestled in the WWF as a former tag team champion, and then was one of the trainers and was instrumental in training Vince McMahon himself for his wrestling matches. That's none other than my good pal, Dr. Tom Pritchard, is going to be the guest next Wednesday on the Kevin Kelly Show.
Fantastic.
Excellent.
Looking forward to talking to Dr. Tom.
Tom and I have been friends for many, many years, and we're going to try as best we can to keep it condensed to half an hour.
Yeah.
But good luck.
Let's blow it out. What? As long as we get one zip question, I'm happy.
That would be you. I'll let you ask that. Yes. But no, I mean, I think, what were you thinking when they told you to cut your hair is the most obvious question.
Well, my question is, why didn't they just make you guys
had a lot of ups and downs.
Why not just make him Chris Candido and Tom Pritchard? It would have been an awesome team. Why do we need Skip and Zip?
You just don't get it, do you?
Oh, I get it.
That was the answer for everything back then. Why don't we just make him, instead of Skip and Zip, why don't we make him Tom and Chris, you know?
Listen, pal. We need Skip and we need Zip. Yes, Vince. It only makes sense. Shut up. All right. So PlaceMeNation.com is the home of the Kevin Kelly Show. You can check that out next Wednesday. Also the home of the Pro Wrestling Super Show that looked at ECW Hardcore Heaven 97. And a lot of really cool wrestling pieces over the last couple of days. The Five Count today looked at SummerSlam tag team matches. Our staff ranked their top five across the board. We also had a really cool piece on Bray Wyatt from Mike Mears, where he kind of looked at what does Bray have to do to take that next step? Is it possible for him to take that next step? And Scott, a character we compared to Sean O'Hare's character, a guy that has all his motivations and great promos, taped vignettes, but what is his end game? What is he looking to accomplish?
Exactly.
And Mike kind of examines that. We also had a really cool piece where Ben Morse went and built his own August pay-per-view card, playing off the podcasts we do here, Scott, where we build our August card. He always takes the challenge on and compares his to ours, and usually comes up a little short, but it's a good effort. New installment of the PTBN Seinfeld rewatch. We looked at the episode The Apartment, Season 2, Episode 8. And also want to plug Adam Murray's look back at the pop music class of 2009 already. Kevin, some of these artists, it seems like they've been around forever, but does 2009 really seem that long ago? And Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, like these are the artists that broke out in 2009, already 5 years ago.
It's amazing how fast time goes and how little staying power that artists have today when you think about it. But scary, very scary.
Very scary. So, all right. Also scary is the first topic on our list here for WWE 2003. And it's one that Scott's very familiar with. And
your segues suck.
He's putting on the lava lamp as we speak, Scott. So why don't you kick this off and tell us all about this first question.
Okay. Kevin Kelly, we're going to talk about the feud of all feuds. The greatest feud. I mean, Flair Dusty, pff, got nothing on this. Talk about the build between Triple H and Scott Steiner heading to that first match at the Rumble in 2003. Was it smart to have them kept apart and do these weird gimmicks, the pose downs, the sit-ups and push-ups and all that crap? Was it smart to not have them attack each other till that week before? And your memories of that so hilarious, so touching dumpster fire match that they had at the in Boston.
Time to play the game!
I thought you were going to play the songs, too. Kevin might have swayed his head. Swayed his head.
It all started with me in Bridgeport, Connecticut, where I first got to meet Scott Steiner.
I was at that show.
There's been very, very few times in my life where I've ever been intimidated at the idea of meeting a professional wrestler.
Hmm.
This was one of those times. When I first started in 96 and I walked up to Ultimate Warrior and I extended my hand and said, "Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly." And he shook my hand and kind of went back to lacing his boots. That was one. And then probably the first time I met Hulk Hogan, I was kind of awestruck. Couldn't have been nicer. But I was legit like concerned, like what kind of guy was Scott Steiner? And would he even, if I walked up to him, was he so out of his mind that he might take a swing at me? I had no idea. As it was, we sat down and he kind of knew who I was, which broke the ice a little bit. And we sat down and we talked about all kinds of different things, college football, wrestling, business outside of wrestling, all kinds of stuff for probably half an hour. So potential crisis averted. So from there, I'm watching how all of this unfolds. Now, at the time, I didn't have a dog in the fight. I could care less about Triple H, and I was afraid of Scott Steiner and didn't really, know whether he was any good or not. I remember his matches from WCW, but I'm like, okay, he did all right. He's kind of a gimmick. Let's see how he does. 20-foot ring, getting older, maybe starting to break down a little bit. Boy, but after this conversation, I was really rooting for him. And this was the reason why the match was so bad and why the rivalry stinks, and it goes down in history as one of the most embarrassing moments ever in the WWE is because of Triple H, because of your boy, because he sandbagged, and because he anybody who's good in the ring can make anybody look good. Any limitations that you have, you mentioned Ric Flair, He had to go from territory to territory, and he had to carry stiffs 60 minutes. And he did that every single night. Now, sometimes he got to work with good guys, but sometimes he didn't. How do you think he carried Sting and Nikita and Luger to all those matches in WCW? Because he was great. He worked around their shortcomings and made matches great. Well, Triple H went in there intentionally to sabotage Scott Steiner. And that's the reason why the match was bad. And that's the reason why I never have any respect for Triple H. For that and for, like we had covered earlier on, the way he said he was too good to lose to either Kane or Rob Van Dam. Screw that guy. I don't care if he's your favorite.
Okay.
You're the guest.
I'm taking the high road.
Oh,
you're the guest.
Give it up. The match itself, iconic though, right? Suplex after suplex after suplex after suplex after suplex. And wait, another suplex.
This one of the strangest matches ever.
Crowd turns, Hunter stumbling around, sledgehammer, just really bizarre across the board.
Don't know the reasons, you know, I wasn't there for how it was to all be executed, but I doubt it was laid out on paper like that. Those two guys went in and said, hey, let's think out the joint tonight. Okay.
Well, it's like they couldn't decide if they wanted it to be, like, it should have been like a 9-minute match where it's the Steiner beating the shit out of him, Triple H runs away. Or should it be a long world heavyweight title clash where Hunter controls and Steiner makes it? It's like they couldn't decide. They did both. So it made no sense. Like, they did right. Steiner stalking him. Triple H is scared. Then they do this long segment of Triple H beating him down. Then Steiner makes his crazy monster comeback, but he's so winded that he's stumbling around and tossing suplexes. And then Hunter's scared again. It was odd. The whole thing was odd.
It was one of those few matches in wrestling where you'd let the audience in for free, lock the doors, and then people would pay any price to be let out.
Yes. I enjoyed the Steve McMichael-Stevie Ray match I saw at a WCW house show in 1998 more than I did watching Hunter and Steiner once again.
Yeah, there was it was bizarre watching it, and it was cringeworthy, and it holds up. You go back and you watch it now, and it's like, you know, sometimes you go back and you watch old wrestling, you're like, oh, this was really good. Ooh, I don't know if that's good. This was rotten back then, and guess what? It's still rotten now, so it's definitely worth the whatever it costs to, you know, go out of your way to see it, if you like watching bad wrestling.
Clean off the grundle sweat, Criscolo. Time for the dusty finish. All right, Kev, what did you think of the Chief Morley gimmick? A nice bounce back for Val Venus, something to get him back on TV. Was the Venus gimmick dated at this point?
It was, and boy, I thought this really felt fresh. I felt like he was looking to just do something different. Very smart guy. If you ever follow him on, you know, if you see any of the things he posts, like on Facebook, he's really into two things, libertarianism and weed.
Sounds like Mark Claire.
Well, he's...
If you had the scotch.
He wasn't advocating, weed. But he was sort of taking a political slant with this, mm-hmm. and you could see how he was, really kind of coming out of his shell and a natural extension of his own personality, which historically in wrestling always works best.
And he had good chemistry with Bischoff, too. I thought that helped make it work.
Val has good chemistry with everybody.
Yeah.
He's one of the most likable guys that you could ever meet, no matter the situation, no matter what he was put in, he always worked to make it the best.
And I think two other guys similar to that, at least in my fan view opinion, William Regal and Lance Storm, they were teaming around this time too. Did you like them as a team? Did you think it was a good use of their talent?
One of my most favorite teams of all time and a great pairing of personalities, two guys that became, they probably already were, I would say, they were somewhere between friendly and friends. Out of this, though, they really became great friends. Mm-hmm. They traveled together. Just having the chance to sit down and talk with them on a few different occasions, how smart they were about a variety of topics, things we shared outside the wrestling industry, books, whatever the topic would be. I don't read. So again, I need these guys to tell me what's good so I can at least fake it and kind of sound smart. But wait, is this on? Oh,
you've embarrassed yourself much worse.
Take that part out of the tape. Anyway. So I talked to them about a lot of different things. They had very strong opinions, too, about the developmental system, which I thought was neat because that was near and dear to my heart.
Right.
They both believed and I don't know if Lance continued his thought process when he was in OVW as a trainer, but they both kind of believed that nobody should get paid. These guys receive a weekly check. And both of them were like, are you kidding me? These guys get paid to train? They should be there for free. We could probably find 1,000 guys that would go there and train for nothing. And we'll discover good wrestling talent that way, which I agree with and completely goes against, you know, I'm not saying that guys shouldn't get paid. What I'm saying is that they should be moved through the system quickly. And it can't become, you know, like the, you know, a scholarship program where you have 8 years to graduate.
Now, what do you know about Regal's injuries or sickness at this time?
You know, common sense ideas about that. What now?
What do you know about Regal's illness or sickness around this time that ended up, didn't it knock him out of the ring for a while and it kind of ended this season?
Jeez, God, almost killed him. They did a tour of India and he came back with an intestinal disorder that I think went undiagnosed for a while. Turned out to be really, really bad and just severe, you know, everything from diarrhea to grundle sweat. It was bad. Very, very bad. Mm. But yeah, I was sick for a long, long time. And I think may have had like, I wouldn't say a reoccurrence, but that probably wouldn't be the right word, but probably like some symptoms that he couldn't shake. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time for it to get away, but it was all because of those freaking trips to India. Who books wrestling in a third world country? I don't get it. Right.
The other side of the coin of that 03 Rumble from the great Steiner Triple H match, which, by the way, we're editing all of your comments out of that as well. Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, which put on a 5-star gem. One of the greatest matches ever. Did that match firmly establish Benoit as this is a guy we could put a strap around in the future?
Well, I don't know how much more convincing we needed before this time. Mm-hmm. Other than just, you know, how solid is his neck? How firm is, you know, both guys? How are we good with injury? Are we over the hurdles? Because we could do anything we want to do with either guy because we know how good and versatile they are. Well, especially Angle had always showed his versatility. But to, you know, to those of us that at least had a brain, and, you know, we were not on the inside. We were kind of on the outside at this point. Looking in, it was like, Jesus, what else do you need to know? Chris Benoit is freaking great. No kidding. The guy's the best wrestler in the world. We should, you know, mm-hmm. lasso him and ride it out as far as it'll go because he's awesome. So I don't know. I never knew what they were waiting on. And it always seemed like they held their nose whenever they decided to give him any kind of a push. So
sounds similar to a guy around now. hopefully his story ends better, but. Mm. Sounds very similar, kind of forced into it or drag kicking and screaming into the push.
It kind of does feel like that, and you'd like to think that they would know better, but it seems like they don't. Mm. And there's been some, and we've documented all of these different cases throughout the years, and I never ever want to be accused of being negative because I'm not. You can't argue with the success. I just always looked at it from a, you know, from reality. This is the way it is. Would business have been dramatically different if they would have done and said everything that I would have said? It may not have been as good, but I think they wouldn't have had the deep, dark lull that they went through. Part of the reason why I lost my job, why not just me, but there were a lot of other folks that lost their job because it went department by department by department. It was because of all the mistakes that they had made from the failed invasion to them turning guys to them, signing these WCW guys and making a mockery out of them to on and on and on and on and on. So anyway, that's kind of where we all were. And it was frustrating for us kind of sitting there realizing that inevitably our number is going to get called and we're all going to, you know, go down to HR and there's a box waiting for us at our desk with our stuff because the McMahons think they know better than everybody and maybe they don't.
Well, one thing they did know is that Brock Lesnar should win the Royal Rumble that year. Was that how early on was that predetermined that that would be the story going into Mania that Brock would win the title and challenge? I mean, win the Rumble and challenge.
When he hit the Shooting Star Press in a dark match in Louisville, and we played a replay of it, like in 2001. I think it was pretty much known back then. It was just a question of getting to that point. They booked WrestleMania a long, long time in advance, and once they knew that they had Kurt, we knew that we had Kurt and Brock, and that was the matchup that everybody wanted to see, so it was the perfect thing to headline WrestleMania with.
And there was really zero other choice, I think, in that year anyway. I mean, Brock made the most sense.
I think absolutely. There were a lot of, you know, those of us that kind of knew what was going to happen, and then we were, you know, just on the inside trying to talk ourselves into some other potential winners and never could. Be like, no, that logically the only one that makes sense is Brock, because what else are you going to do? You have to do Brock and Kurt now. If you're ever going to do it at WrestleMania. So, and well, what are we going to do? Have some screwy finish and then go to February? Why? Just have him win. Very simple.
What was the scoop with Shawn Michaels at this point? Was it known yet that he was back on a, for the most part, regular basis, or was he still just picking his spots here and there when needed?
There was, I think by now he was pretty much back, because, you know, he'd done the SummerSlam thing and it was, well, we'll see how he feels. And then it was a more consistent thing. I think by now he was full time. There was always that part where I was kind of like looking over my shoulder just to make sure that he was okay, both from a back standpoint and whatever else standpoint. But, you know, like I had said the last time I was on with you guys, you know, coolest thing I ever did, you know, one of the coolest things I ever did, sat there and prayed with both Sean and Eddie Guerrero in the hallway at the Mohegan Sun, you know, before Raw. And that was, you know, kind of an affirmation that I really felt like Sean had turned the corner.
Did what was the backlash for Rock at that Raw 15 special? Was that a surprise? Did you guys kind of expect it may happen? Of course, he showed up via pre-tape. The show was live at the World, and he was booed pretty much from everyone there, and that would precipitate the heel turn that ended up being really great. But was that kind of expected that that might happen?
Yes, I think so. I think that was kind of like one of those things like the Hogan Rock match at WrestleMania 18. Let's do it this way. Let's see how the people take. Let's see which direction they go, and then we'll go from there. But I think I think they believed that if they went that direction with that pre-tape, with that attitude that he kind of came across with, that the people would react accordingly. So and that was what we got. So it did work according to the plan. But I'm not quite sure how we know this will work. It may have been more of a let's just do it. This is the way we want to do it. Let's try it this way and see which way the wind blows.
Has anyone ever had two fan-mandated driven heel turns that saved a guy's career more than The Rock? I mean, it saved his career in 1997, right? The fans turned him heel. He used that to spawn a fantastic character that turned his career around and made him a megastar. 2003, got a little boring, a little bland as the happy Rock. Fans piss all over him again. They say he sold out, and it drives him to be this awesome Hollywood heel character that, while only lasts about 2.5 months, is some of his best work in wrestling history.
It was, and everybody forgets, you know, Rock hurt his knee, and he had to have knee surgery. And between the fans turning and then the time off from that knee surgery, that really was the best thing that his career ever needed. But I go back to that, you know, the entrance video for, you know, Hollywood Rock, and which I think debuted, did that debut on Raw?
No, I think it was at No Way Out, wasn't it?
Was it No Way Out? It was, you know, with the helicopters and all that. And that new edit of his music. Thought that was all great. And, yeah, he's so good. He's so good at everything.
That's one character or one run I've never heard like a bad. I feel like everyone has a detractor of, you know, this is someone who detracts away from everything in wrestling history. Like, there's a thread on a message board I go to right now, where one guy is arguing that maybe Steve Austin was overrated because we look back at the Attitude Era now and think, it wasn't as, you know, the short matches, the crash. It's like, no, that's what makes Austin great, because he was so good in that environment and he holds up now. I feel like that Hollywood Rock, I've never really seen too many negative things about it. I've never seen anyone say, overrated, or, nah, I didn't like that awesome entrance video. I think that speaks to how great it was.
And again, I think it took his career and brought it to the next level when you thought he had already peaked. So he was able to push through fan apathy and bring people around again, 180-degree turn, when they had all turned their back on him and thought, ah, past tense, he's an actor now, whatever. And he wasn't really all that good to begin with. Oh, wait a minute, this is awesome. I'm back marking out for The Rock again, but in a whole new way. This gave everybody, I think, a deeper, longer-lasting appreciation for the culmination that was his career, even though this, like you said, this was just a short-term thing.
Leaving Sacramento. Sacramento, there I go. Leaving Sacramento.
Out of the street.
Sacramento, there I go. They got some fat ass women there, and Rock is gonna just say no.
What a song, just say no.
Well, I might take a plane, I might take a train. How do you people live here? You must be insane. I'm leaving Sacramento. Sacramento, I won't stay. Check this out, check this out.
Check it out.
But I'll be sure to come back when the Lakers beat the Kings in May.
Greatest concert ever.
Besides that performance, my favorite part of that whole thing was when Austin's out in the truck and he's like, what are you doing out there selling bootleg shirts of The Rock?
I wish Jerry Lawler would have been as quiet as he was a couple of years ago in Montreal.
Okay, awful joke. But yeah, that was...
I'm serious. Too. I wish he would have shut up.
I know. I don't know why he had to butt in, but that's...
Vince is like, oh, tell him, King.
It's so funny, man. It's so funny. Puppies. God, does anyone else just need to... Anyone else need to...
No, you're trying
to... I sound like I'm having the Jerry Lawler... episode. Does anyone else need the Kevin Kelly 2003 treatment more than Jerry Lawler right now? Just the pink slip in the box.
It would have been great. Ew, that's so dirty.
The pink slipping in the box. All right, Scott, what do we got next?
Okay. Hulk Hogan. What led to him coming back in 2003 after he left in the summer
money.
Of 2002? Was it... Well, let me direct it this way. Was it him coming up? Was it him walking up to Vince and saying, I want a big payoff. Let me come back. Or was it Vince... desperate for a name at 19, going to him and saying, come back and I'll pay you. Like, who initiated it, Vince or Hogan?
I don't know, because at what point was he going to have Rock Austin? At what point did he know that?
Mm.
So if you have Rock and Austin, if you have Brock and Kurt, when, where, and why, and how do you need Hulk Hogan? Now, maybe if you're Vince, you're like, you want your cake with icing and cherries and you want to eat it too and you want seconds. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what it was. And really, it goes back to and all of the things with Hogan. I think it goes back to Vince's friendship with Hogan, Vince's relationship with him, is that they have, you know, very open lines of communication. And I think Hogan was always there. And Vince is always trying to think of an idea for Hogan. He always, and I've said this throughout the time on the show here, he always had like his top four. And it would depend on the era, who it is. Austin, Taker, Mick, Shawn Michaels. Then it would be Rock, Brock Lesnar, Triple H, Chris Benoit. But number five throughout all the years was always Hulk Hogan. Most of the time it was number one. Mm-hmm. But if there was something he could do with Hogan, for Hogan, involving Hogan, Vince was in for it. So whether it went from Hogan to Vince or Vince to Hogan, either way, I'm sure Vince was all ears. Just hoping Hogan would say yes.
All right, so another guy that returned around this time, Steve Austin, of course, had left, walked out in 2002, had a lot of troubles during his time off, the incidents with Deborah. Then he settles that. They end up getting divorced. He does the Raw magazine article. Did you think, first of all, thoughts on the troubles and during his time off, did you think he was done? Did you ever think he'd come back? Thoughts on that Raw magazine piece? And then did you think he had a longer run in him than he'd end up having? Or did you know that it was going to be short-lived?
Well, I think that, you know, if you think about what's going on now with Ray Rice. And if Steve Austin would have, if that would have happened now, I think Steve would have been completely done for. But there's a part of me that I did not, with the way it was going, the stories and the drinking and all this and that, I was thinking that it was going to have like this Hollywood celebrity, old wrestler, bad ending. And, you know, but luckily he was able to turn it around. And then on the flip side of that, so the personal life, he's starting to, you know, maybe piece back together a little bit. As far as the wrestling goes, I don't think he owed the WWE anything. I don't think, you know, as far as however long he was going to come back, that would be fine. Because, again, I think he had given us everything that we could have asked for. As far as a penance or whatever, his opinions and walking away and the way he left and the way he came back, I never had a problem with him walking away. And if he wanted to come back, that was completely up to him. So, you know, as far as Steve Austin was concerned, I was very worried about it. And the least thing I was worried about was him wrestling again.
The I would agree with that. And I think you're absolutely correct with the point about how it seemed like his Hollywood story or wrestler story that was going to end very poorly. I remember in June and July when that stuff came out, it seemed like you just never expected that to happen to Steve Austin because everything seemed so together for him. And then all of a sudden he walks out, he's angry, he starts quitting the company multiple occasions. Then you hear this story where he's, you know, getting in a fight with Deborah at a restaurant and then it leaks that he hit her. And it just seemed like, oh my God, this, you know, current legend of wrestling, it's just completely crumbling before your eyes. And I just remember being very upset at the time about it.
Crying upset or?
Just sad. He was one of my favorites at the time, you know, and then to see him just spiral downhill like that and do something as awful as he did, it just felt crappy. And because wrestling was headed downhill overall, it felt like this sudden thud of an era or end of an era had happened, you know, coming off this awesome, awesome run.
If, and yeah, I always think like, well, what would have happened if, you know, if Steve Austin would have died, would that have been a wrestler's death that would have forced changes in the industry sooner? You know, would they have been able to head off what happened with Chris Benoit and with Eddie Guerrero and others if something like that would have happened with Steve?
I don't think so. Because
it was on its way.
Yeah, but I don't think they would have pegged him as, you know, Benoit was a roided up, drug addled. Like Austin, they would have said, well, you know, he got paranoid about a spot. And then he was always a drinker on screen, so people would have conflated that, said he was probably just an alcoholic. He hit his wife in a fit of rage, was worried about what was going to happen, and drank himself to death. Like, I don't know if it would have made any change. It's not like I don't think anyone would have called it roid rage. I don't remember any roid rage stuff at the time. I remember just being, oh yeah, Austin, he likes to drink, and he beat his wife. Like, it was more almost like a redneck cops scene than anything, you know?
Absolutely. Mm. So, okay. Now, we know that Scott has man crush on Triple H, but JR, who was your, like, kind of, who was your favorite? Who was your one go-to guy that the channel would always stop? Oh, this is it. I'm
at
watching this
time?
This yeah.
It was Angle, Kurt Angle.
Yeah?
My favorite. Had a bunch of his shirts, lives by the three eye. No, but he was one of my favorites. I watched all his matches, loved all his promos from 2000 till 2004, he was definitely my favorite in that stretch. Before that, I'd say it was Austin, and before that was mid-90s Shawn Michaels. Before that, Macho Man. It was kind of my evolution of fandom.
Scott, before Triple H, who? Bruno?
What? Stanislaus Zbyszko.
George Hackenschmidt. I got his first t-shirt. It's pretty cool. It's got it. No. My very first wrestler was Jimmy Snuka. Then Hogan.
Mid-80s, like 83, 84.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the first. That was the match that hooked me. Hogan, Morocco. Flair, Morocco. Snuka, Morocco.
Right.
October 17, 1984.
Flair, Morocco would be a cool match.
Flair, Morocco would be a great match. Then Hogan. Hogan and Flair. And the Horsemen. It was weird because I like baby faces in the WWF, but I liked heels on Saturday nights at 6:05.
Wow.
But then I... and then the 90s... I like stunning Steve Austin. His WCW 91, 92 through 94 was awesome. And then Austin in 96. And then pretty much by DX, it was Triple H.
Yeah.
And all the way to now.
Yeah, I was definitely on the Austin bandwagon early, too. From Stunning, I loved the Hollywood Blondes, my favorite tag team for a while. It was thrilled when he came in 96.
And for me, it was even before that, when he was in the Dangerous Alliance.
Yes, yep.
Love that stretch. I'm watching those matches now.
Dusty, your favorite first?
Dusty was my favorite growing up in Florida. What?
Our friend Dr. G, our friend George. You know George. He's a big Dusty guy, too. Yeah, he's from Florida. Big Dusty guy, too.
See, there you go. So from the Dream then to
Flair?
Flair was second. My favorites were Tully and Arn and the Midnight Express. And then Flair, then Sting really got, but by this point now I'm kind of in college, so it was sort of hard to root for Sting, but I liked his energy and I liked what he was doing. And then after that, I started working in the business when I got out of college, and it was hard to have that same level of fandom. I became sort of a nerd for Benoit and Regal and those types of guys after the match they had at the Pillman Memorial Show. And I really became a nerd for them and that style. And I was a big Brian Pillman fan. I liked what he did as Flying Brian and then kind of the metamorphosis he had. And the change and the Hollywood Blondes, I really like them as a team. The one match that sticks out, and I can't remember where it was, but I saw it not too long ago, was Steve Austin and Ricky Steamboat, which I think was on the same show that Hogan won the belt from Flair with Shaq as a referee, but I could be wrong.
Yep, they had a few matches over that summer and fall. Arguably, probably the best one made him at the Clash, right, Scott? This is the one we ranked. We watched them all a few months ago.
Clash, the Clash between those two was 5.5 stars. We go even past 5 stars.
And there was, the peak of my fandom, like I had said before, kind of in that 84 to 88 period of Jim Crockett Promotions, NWA. So, I would say I was a bigger Tully and Arn and Horseman fan. Like, I was one of those, jerk-offs that would go to the show and, wear a suit. And throw up the four fingers. I was one of those guys. Seriously.
Good.
I thought they were the coolest thing and just loved all. I liked being a heel fan. Mm-hmm. Because the fans were like pseudo smart at the time. I was like one of those pseudo smart fans and thought I knew everything. And there were fans that hadn't, been fully awakened yet. So they didn't like the fact that there were heel fans. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of like provoking them. That was fun.
Forever a troll.
Don't you hate when people would put a K at the end of Ric Flair on signs? I just saw one now. I'm playing here in Studio B.
It's up there with the two T's and Bret Hart.
Oh, that was terrible.
Spelling error is chic, misspelled with the I and the E transposed. Spelling errors in general drive me crazy, but spelling errors with names of people that you know in wrestling, up a wall.
I hate it when... But even TBS, 90, 91 pay-per-views, the graphic would say Ric Flair with a K.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that. I'm sorry.
One of the early episodes of Ring of Honor had Haas spelled with two S's instead of two A's. And I went wild. So.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
One guy whose name was never misspelled was Eric Bischoff. Now... Why do you think they had already undercut him? Because by 03, Vince was already publicly trashing Raw that it was garbage. And why do you think they did that? Why do you think they were undercutting Raw and he was only the GM for 3.5 months?
Well, it was part of that angle where he came out and said, you got to shake up Raw and give me 30 days because the show sucks. It seemed kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Well, remember how they gave Eric Bischoff an audition? Way back when, say, 1988, and maybe it was 1990, let's say. And they flew him to Stanford, and because they knew he was a stooge and was, was worthless and kind of a jerk off, they had him, for my tryout, I had to sell a baseball bat. And it was a Robin Ventura, stamped Louisville slugger, and so I talked about that. Well, they had Eric Bischoff sell a broom. And they had him demonstrate the broom by sweeping the floor of the TV studio. And the camera panned out wide. and there was tape rolling in Master Control, and I've seen the tape. It does exist. It still lives there, of Eric Bischoff sweeping the floor of the TV studio at Titan Towers. It's what they always thought of him. And it was just another way for Vince to get over on the guy that he beat, because he's not one to, hey, good fight, help you up, dust you off, and send you on your way. He's, hey, good fight, as he's picking you up, he's kicking you in the balls again, and then burning your house down, and raping your wife, and laughing at you while he's doing it. That's the type of guy Vince is.
Okay.
What did you think of the angle?
So other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, what did you think of the play? It was fine. It was fine for what it is. It was, you know, it was good theater. It was interesting television. But I always knew that Vince was going to win. By this point, they had spoiled the ending of anything involving Vince. It's like that scene in Big Daddy where Rob Schneider's character gets frustrated because the kid changes the rules of the game. What's the name of the game? I win. How do you play? I win. What are the rules? I win. All the time you win. This is bullshit. That's Vince. Vince is that kid. So no matter it was, Vince is going to show his ass for 5 minutes, but in the end, he's going to win, and he's going to win convincingly, and he's going to have the Kiss My Ass Club, and he's going to do all of these different things to really put it out there that he's got the biggest sword and he's not afraid to swing it.
There was a thoughts about Edge's injury at the time. He was seemed to be fast-tracked, seemed to be headed for the main events at the No Way Out show. He was supposed to team with Benoit and Brock against Team Angle. Goes down right before that show, ends up missing a year. Did you guys feel like it was going to really derail him, or was it one of those cases where you thought maybe some time away could help? What was the feeling backstage at the time?
Anytime you have those neck injuries, it was always like your breath got taken away because you realized, oh, he's going to be gone a year. Oh, my gosh. And then you think, what's he going to be like in a year? Meaning mentally, how's he going to do with sitting out? Here's a guy that hasn't sat still for 5 minutes in the past 4 years. Now is going to have to be, is going to be on the sidelines and for a long period of time. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, it sucks. It each one of those, even when like Scotty Tuhati, when he had the fusion surgery, it was the same way. What? Oh, my God. Because that was like blowing it. That was like the Achilles tendon in football. Nobody partially tears the Achilles tendon, right? It's always up. Achilles tendon gone for the year. Injured reserve. Tommy John surgery. Oh, he'll be back in a year. Same thing. Neck fusion surgery. Wrestler. Oh, my God. So, yeah, it sucked.
Speaking of Team Angle. We already know what JR's thoughts are on Kurt. But what were your thoughts, Kevin, on Mr. Haas and Mr. Benjamin when they came in?
Well, I was thrilled because after Russ's death, again, the year before, and I probably told the story here, and forgive me if I hadn't, or forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but Russ and Charlie and I stood on the floor of the Astrodome. We looked out kind of just the mass of people, and they had the production truck kind of on the end. To the right of the stage, because the dome was so massive and they still fit 70,000 people in there. We were able to kind of look around and go, okay, guys, goal setting. Let's talk about it. Let's make WrestleMania next year goal. And then we know Russ passed away. And so everything got delayed. Charlie blew out his knee. So it became a year, year plus. And then here we were now 2 years later, and they'd put Charlie and Shelton together, and Team Angle was born. I was thrilled. Especially for Charlie, because, you know, I was at Paul Bearer at his brother's funeral, and he was like, you know, he's like a brother to me. So I was just really, really happy for him to be able to get his success. I thought him and Shelton were the perfect team and the perfect additions for Kurt. The perfect guys to take falls when needed that could always get their heat back because they're with Kurt.
What else happened to Charlie? Have you heard from him since the whole kerfluffle at Ring of Honor when he knocked the guy's hat off for a Grizzly Redwood and the hat feud? Remember that? That was hot news for a while.
Yeah. We were just talking about it a few weeks ago. No, he's never called me.
Odd.
And I've never called him.
He just completely vanished after that. It seemed like such a big deal at the time, and then it's just been complete silence.
Yeah.
All right. We talked about Rock's gimmick earlier on the show. What did you think of the rematch with Hogan at No Way Out? Kind of an odd spot for it. Was it really needed to have that match again? Rock beats him again with help from Vince to set up Mania.
That's the reason why it was done. Everything sort of done through the prism of WrestleMania, from Mania booked, work backwards, figure out what you need to do in order to get everything in the right place. So give Rock momentum, which he didn't really need, but sympathy on Hogan, heat on Vince. It's a ready-made matchup. They, again, inside the bubble, there wasn't too much like, it's only No Way Out. It's only, you know, October. We don't have to sweat this one. Everyone was really important. It's kind of the way, you know, it was looked at when I was there. And so this was important to really gain some momentum on the way towards WrestleMania.
Jeff Hardy, out the door. Looked like he was kind of a mess at the end there, particularly that match with Jericho and No Way Out. Was it drugs? Was he just burnt out in general? What led to his exit?
Again, I don't know I don't know what he was doing. I know there were rumors of drug use. I never saw him do drugs. I never used drugs with him. That was always me and Harvey Whippleman. No, I'm just kidding about that part. It was, I don't know. It's never just one thing. It's not like all of a sudden so-and-so becomes a drug addict. It's all the injuries and the, you know, leading down the road. You could see the car heading in that direction, though, absolutely. And it's sad, you know, because, again, I knew them when they were kids, and you see them grow up so fast, and now, you know, they're shooting heroin in between their toes, and it's like, oh, boy. So, sucks.
All right. I don't know if to ask you a follow-up of, so you saw Jeff Hardy shoot heroin.
No, not in between his toes.
It seemed like he needed some time off, though.
Yeah.
I feel like he had been going hard for a while. His brother, though, as Jeff was kind of faltering, the guy that was, many thought maybe the Marty Jannetty of the team, was breaking out a bit with the Mattitude gimmick. Talk about that gimmick a little bit. Talk about his breakout. How are you feeling? Did this seem like something that could really get him to the next level?
One of the bright spots of SmackDown, though. Custom made that Mattitude gimmick for the SmackDown show. Matt Facts, all those different things. Out of all the guys that broke away from their tag team partner, Bubba and D-Von, Edge, Christian, I think Matt had the best wins above replacement, let's say. Let's put it in terms of that. Because what you expected Matt to be, the Marty Jannetty, he wound up excelling and becoming a almost main event guy. Almost. A very consistent mid and upper card guy. Would have been perfect in a different era as an Intercontinental champion. And that is a compliment, because when that title used to mean something, that meant you were almost the man. You could main event the B shows. So he was he did great. I was so proud of him for being able to have the creative force and the energy to drive a lot of this. And this was, you know, some guys click good with the writing team. And this was one that did. Edge and Christian did, Kurt Angle did, and then of course Matt Hardy did.
You think Taz really helped him too? I feel like on commentary you always put him over strong. He pushed the gimmick on commentary a lot with the banana juice and the nut butter and the training regiment, Shannon Moore. Like, I felt like Taz was a big part of that too.
I think that it was a real cohesive effort on SmackDown altogether. Mm. There was a all for one for all mentality on that show, because there was the definite feeling that Raw was the A team and SmackDown was the B team, and they were the redheaded stepchild and they had to overcome. So there was that, you know, kind of that Heyman born, hey, we're, you know, nobody expects anything great out of us. Let's go out there and prove it how great we are, you know, that type of deal. So yeah, Taz helped, everybody helped. It's never one guy that gets the talent over. It's everybody. Commentator has to buy in. The talent has to buy in. The guy he's working with has to buy in. Camera, lights, music, everything has to work. Everything has to be exactly right for a character to get over.
Now, Safeco Field, kind of a very unique setting. I've always thought that JR and I had this discussion. I still think the most amazing panoramic view I've ever seen on TV of a Mania was 17 at the Astrodome, which I thought was just such an epic view. But what were your thoughts on Safeco and the feel of that day in Seattle?
Well,
not necessarily the matches per se, but just that the aura of being in that building.
The feel of that day for me was one of misery, as I was 2 weeks removed from having been fired. So thank you very much, Scott, for opening that wound up. I really appreciate it. What a jerk. No, it looked neat. I saw it on TV. It looked cool. I was like, hey, I hope, you know, Lawler and JR, you know, remember who isn't there writing their VO notes anymore. I wrote my notes, King. Can't read a word of this. Ah, puppies. So that's pretty much it. Neat looking building, though, right?
Very cool, especially at the time of day where it was light out. It almost seemed like it was light out for the undercard, and then as the big matches started, it started to get dark, which I thought was a really cool feel to it.
And I was just the biggest thing I was disappointed in is that I didn't get to see Charlie debut at a Mania, you know. But anyway, it was, and I think Jim Kettner got to go, which was pretty cool because Kettner was very instrumental in Russ and Charlie's development. So. But yeah, those types of buildings look neat. I know that's tough on cameras because of white balancing. So trying to be able to, you know, as it gets darker, you've got to tweak things, whatever. But just a neat transition from day into night. Absolutely.
Hmm. I'm still sorry.
It's okay. I forgive you.
I was going to ask another Steiner question, but I didn't feel like opening up that fucking can of worms. So
no, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm not. So go ahead.
Well, you listen. You can't ignore the facts. He's sandbagged. He got away with it.
And it's amazing. Steiner's not even on Mania.
That's how big of a sandbag one. Now you think about it in terms. Let's put it in terms of like my favorite television show, Big Brother. Oh, he got Scott Steiner voted out of the house quickly by completely sandbagging him.
Because Scott Steiner would have been a dick in the house. That's why.
Well, no, but he turned everybody against him quickly and he never gave him a chance and could have worked with him to help everyone make more money instead of, no, all the focus has to be on me. These guys just need to step up. Somebody show me the definition of what it means to step up, because there isn't one. It's up to you to decide what that means. I'm stepping up right now. Well, not according to me. Well, who's the decision maker? Well, perception is reality, pal. Here's an example of some double talk that you'll only hear in the developmental system of the WWE now. Hey, how was my match? Well, you know, it was good. There were some things that you could have done. You know, but you did some good things, and there were things that I liked. There were some different things in there. You know, you could have taken your time. You could have gone a little faster, but I think everything was good overall. You know, again, you got to make sure that when you're there, you know, you do it when the time is right. You know what I mean? Everything is great. You know, we don't know what the future holds. Got to take one day at a time, but man, you're doing good. You're doing great. I'm not really sure. It may not work out, but you may have to go in a different direction. And you wonder why guys go crazy in the developmental system. That's it right there. And Triple H is in charge of it. And the same guy that sandbagged Scott Steiner is in charge of everything. That's the guy that's running the company. That to me speaks to the character, the core of the person. But what do I know?
Man, you were just beating Scott Santa Claus tonight, just over and over.
You're defending Scott Steiner so much, Jesus!
No, it's not Scott Steiner.
What are you, like, the Oakland Raiders reclamation projects?
It wouldn't have mattered. We could have rolled Chief Jay Strongbow down to the ring in a wheelchair, and if Triple H was good, he would have known how to get something out of him. But instead, he would have taken Chief Jay in the ring, and he would have embarrassed him and humiliated him, and make it look like, well, he's no good, but then deflects all the blame. It's not me. It's him. It's this guy in the wheelchair. Well, no shit. Of course we know Scott Steiner has a bad wheel. No kidding. We got it. We know he has a bulky back. We know he's too muscular for his frame. We understand all that. Work around it. How good are you? The old story in wrestling is you could take a broomstick and throw it in there with a veteran. He's going to get a match out of the broomstick, right? Where's Triple H's broomstick moment? Where is that? He's always had somebody that was equal to or better than him. And when he's had to pull good matches out of not so good guys, if he doesn't like them, he ain't going to give them a good match, but he's going to be able to deflect the blame. Time to play the game. That's what it's all about. That's what Christmas means to me, Charlie Brown.
I'm going to play baseball with Michael Elgin.
All right. Next.
All right. Memories of Nathan Jones.
Oh, my gosh.
Was Taker's streak ever in jeopardy here? Like, was there rumors that A-Train was going to go over, or was this just holdover, Mania match?
It was kerfuffle. It was nonsense. Never going to happen.
When did they decide to pull Nathan out of that match?
I don't know. He was such a train wreck. Here's a funny Nathan Jones story. He has money to buy a car. He's not going to buy a car, though. He wants to buy a Hummer. So he goes to the Hummer dealership. Now, according to the story and the way I heard it, he had enough cash to buy the Hummer outright. But the very savvy salesman on the opposite side of the desk from Nathan Jones said, "You know what you should do? You should keep some of that cash. You should let us finance it for you." Nathan Jones was like, "Sounds like a good deal. Get to keep some of my cash." So instead of, say, paying $40,000 for the Hummer, they now get him for $60,000 over time. But he had the $40,000 cash to buy it. That's the type of mental midget that they were dealing with.
So if he missed his flight, he wouldn't know that he could book another one, is that what you're saying?
Apparently not. Apparently we would have to rebook Nathan Jones versus Jay Lethal. Yes, that's exactly what would have happened. Or ACH, if he ever learned how to drive and got a driver's license and realized that it's time to grow up, he could go to a car dealership with cash and yet somehow be convinced to finance the thing.
All right, was there ever legit concern, Kevin, that Kurt Angle was not going to make it to WrestleMania? There was a rumored scenario that Brock would win the title on SmackDown and then face a heel Benoit at WrestleMania stepping in for Angle. So answer those, and I got a couple questions about the match itself.
There was always a general sense of caution with Kurt. As flippant as they were, and again, how times change, now everybody's so precautious, cautious with concussions, and we talked about it here on the show. Kurt at SummerSlam, he gets, KO'd for real, and then it's like, you got to get back out there. Okay. How bad is Kurt? He was really bad. He was really bad. It was one of those things where he was like out of it until like his music hit, and then he would perk up. Now, I wasn't there. I heard all this anecdotally, though, from people that were there. So whether or not they had Brock win SmackDown match with Benoit, whomever, as the as the backup plan, I'm sure there was a contingency plan, because there was always doubt about Kurt.
What did you think of that match in general? The changing of the guard, the feeling backstage during and then after the match, or especially after Brock botches the Shooting Star Press?
It was a tale of two matches. It was kind of a struggle. I was watching those two guys, and they were struggling with one another. Sometimes a struggle is good. This was a struggle for do it my way. No, do it my way. No, I'm going to go. No, I'm going to go. It kind of felt like that. Then it settled down in the middle. Then they got cooking. And then I don't remember anything after the Shooting Star Press, because I just thought that was it. I thought he was dead, paralyzed, something. And then it was. And that took all the wind out of my sails about everything. So in retrospect, I don't know whether or not that match was good, bad, great, or horrible. All I remember is the Shooting Star Press. Other than, I seem to remember there being a struggle in the beginning with each guy wanting to be in charge. Is that a fair assessment of it?
Yeah, I mean, I love that match. I think it's really good. I think that adds to it because it kind of felt like they were battling for control. It felt like Kurt didn't want to hand it over, but Brock wanted to take it. But I thought it really did feel like a change in the guard of the main event scene, one that we had had all brawling that style since 1997-ish. And now all of a sudden we're ushering in the mat-based, I don't say MMA style because it really wasn't, just more of a technical amateur style that seemed to be seeping into the product at this main level.
And there was ample reason for it with the guys they had on the roster that could work this style. But the guys that could work that style were never the ones that were in favor, other than Kurt. And they took Kurt and they made him a comedy act. So there you go. It was the tug of war back and forth between what are we? Are we professional wrestling or are we entertainment? So
regardless of the outcome, because we should judge things on the process, not the outcome sometimes. Was it a good idea for Brock to save this move for the big moment, or really effing dumb to bust it out the biggest moment of his career and the first time on TV?
This is what they're told. This is what guys are told in wrestling school. Well, I can do a 450. Well, I can do a shooting star press. Great. You know when you do that? WrestleMania. From now on, just do a side headlock takeover. Work on your arm drags. Bust out the shooting star when you're in Mania, kid. That's what they told Brock. You know Brock Lesnar can do a shooting star press. Great, tell him to save it for WrestleMania. Then he does it in the dark match. They actually play a replay of it. First time I ever saw that. Truck rolled a replay on the shooting star press, which looked amazing, incredible. And they said, don't ever do it again. So should he have done this every night on the road? He wouldn't have made it to Mania if he would have. Either it would have destroyed his neck or his knees or both. So, yeah, there was good reason for him not to do it and then a better reason in hindsight for him never to do it. But you save that for WrestleMania 100 times out of 100.
What did you think of the Hogan-Vince street fight? Were you surprised by how well it went? It's one of my favorite matches on this show, but maybe one of my favorite street fights. And your thoughts on the Piper running and him coming back?
Every time I watch Vince and Hogan or Vince and anybody, it's always like where's it going to fall apart? Oh, hey, it's not falling apart. It's actually pretty good. Love how they take their time. Mm-hmm. Just love kind of the feel of it. You know, guys that really don't do anything and then they go out and get a great reaction. The Piper stuff, I don't know. I didn't really take away from it. I don't remember it, to be honest with you. Refresh my memory.
Piper came out in a hoodie, so you didn't know it was him. He pulls it down, gets a big pop. Looks like he's going to hit Vince, and then he pops Hogan and walks out. Got a really good reaction because it was such a surprise. He had been on, they did that video package leading up to Mania with all the celebrities and former wrestlers picking between Hogan and Vince, and he had been, anti-Vince in that. So I think people expected him to come when he came out there with that he was going to pop Vince, and then he ended up sticking around.
And he popped Hogan?
Yeah, he hit Hogan with the chair.
That son of a bitch!
Yeah.
Son of a bitch!
Yep.
Son of a bitch! Right. He hit Hogan?
All right, so you've given your thoughts on Hunter quite a bit tonight. But let's talk about the specific Hunter versus Booker feud and match. Did it ruin Booker? Should Booker have won here? Thoughts on the build with the "you people will never be champion" and the pedigree delay where it's 17, 18 seconds between the pedigree and the pin?
I'm going to let Scott answer that question.
No, Scott's talked about it before, and we don't want to hear it anymore from him. So you give us your thought.
I don't really want to hear this either, so.
If you want a hole dug, do you get a shovel or do you get a backhoe? What's going to dig a deeper hole faster? Well, Triple H is the wrestling equivalent of the backhoe. Nobody can dig a hole in wrestling faster than Scott Priscola's favorite professional wrestler, Triple H. And happy to throw you in it, too. And so, then blame you for the hole being there.
Well, not me.
No, blame the guy in the hole. I told him not to do it, Vince. Guy doesn't listen. Doesn't get it. He doesn't get it.
Should Booker have won, or did you believe that they were saving the title change for Goldberg? Or was the way that story was booked said that Booker had to win, regardless?
Here was the thing. I knew going in it didn't matter, because I knew what this was. This was Triple H giving Vince's jollies, driving the last nails in the WCW coffin of building up Triple H by having him go through all the former WCW champions, making them all look bad, making them all look stupid, not really doing anything for himself in the process other than making his own dick hard and making sure that Vince's was too. Just my opinion.
A guy that wasn't on this show, but was taking it to the next level, was
17th and final appearance of Kelly on this show.
The one guy left who actually likes you too, and you're just burying him.
I'm not burying you.
John Cena.
You basically are. Yes. You're burying his husband. Go ahead.
You're pretty much. and my PSC doesn't like you anymore anyway. John Cena, he comes out, does a forgettable rap. But from this point on is when they start his build. Did you think they made him a believable challenger early on?
I did.
Did you like Cena?
I personally, professionally loved him in OVW. When I got to meet him, work with him, what a great guy. Just awesome. Just a cool cat. Really good. Had tons of boots, had tons of gear made, and then went into a gimmick where he wore all camouflage shorts and, you know, blow up sneakers and never got to wear any of his cool boots and trunks after he turned. I thought the gimmick was perfect for him. It's a famous story. It was born out of a flight back from Europe or something like that and sitting across from Stephanie and started doing some freestyle rap, and for whatever reason it all connected. Because he was kind of like gimmickless at that point.
Right.
Other than young upstart.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's funny how that moment in time works. And it goes back to, goes back to Steve Bradley. Because Steve had that moment in time with Stephanie as well. And it was like, so what do you do? What do you do outside of wrestling? I really don't do anything outside of wrestling. What were you like as a kid growing up? All I wanted to do was wrestle. Did you play any sports in high school? No, I just wrestled. I started wrestling professionally at 14, putting shows on as, 14-year-old kid wanted to wrestle. Did you ever go to college? Did you ever want to do anything outside of wrestling? Nope, just wanted to wrestle. Stephanie looked at me and then looked at Steve and kind of went, okay, thanks, and walked away. That was the end of it. So, you got to make the most of those conversational opportunities when you have them. And to every camp that I go to, I always tell guys, you've got to have that elevator speech ready to go. Somebody asks you, so what about you? Be ready to knock it out of the park, because you don't know when you're never going to get an opportunity again.
What are your memories of Jericho and Shawn Michaels as an all-time classic that Mania did a steal, a loaded show? Should Jericho have gone over, or is this a thank you to Shawn because it seemed like he may not really be sticking around full time?
That was a very good question. What is it about this match that was unique to me? The finish of that was, he's going away, as opposed to building kind of something off of it. You can always build something off of something, but the way it was done, that was kind of like one of the thoughts that I had. And again, you're never quite sure whether or not you're going to have Sean today, tomorrow, next week. He could go, he could stay. So yeah, that it kind of had an air of finality. And I looked at this card in this show and was like, wow, we're writing off Hunter. We're writing off Austin and Rock. We're writing off, we've got Vince and Hogan. We'll never do that again. We're writing off Shawn Michaels. Jeez. Who's next? Brock Lesnar, the guy who just corkscrewed his head into the mat? I don't know. Edge, ooh, he's out. Oh, Benoit, yeah, good. Except the company hates wrestling. Ay, Chihuahua. Now what do we do? So that was kind of my gut feeling, like the whole night overall.
What do you rank Austin Rock 3? Fitting end to the rivalry and the run? How do you rank it versus the other two matches?
It's the third of a movie trilogy. It's satisfying to purists, to fans, but nothing was ever going to top what they had done in the past. You know? Good little wink at the end. But certainly not of the same significance or level of their previous two.
I feel like a greatest hits compilation.
Yeah. Mm. It was, you know, good little match in the middle of the card. Filler.
The legacy of this show. Going in, everyone thought, you know, it's just another Mania. But when you finish watching it, you're like, this might go down as one of the five greatest show WrestleManias, top to bottom of all time. Do you feel that way about it? Where do you rank it? And did it pass the torch from the Attitude Era to the next level, to the next chapter?
If Brock Lesnar had not have almost broken his neck on the Shooting Star Press, it would have been top five. That moment scared me to death about the next generation. Torch was passing. You're always sad about that. To me, there wasn't that. There's a NWO type of we're taking over kind of thing, or what they did here, which was through atrophy and attrition and injury, we've got Kurt and Brock as the main event, which we always know we wanted to go to, but this is where we are. This is the time. I always wonder if they felt Brock had one step in, one step out. He really didn't love the business. Kurt Angle loved the business, but there was hesitancy because of his injuries and because he was already on the pills by this point. So it was a time of turmoil in, you know, and here I was just losing my job and the war was just getting started and you don't know how that's going to affect business. So in hindsight, with everything considered, it was great. It was a great show. Brock's thing kind of took it down a peg for me, but to me, the darkest days lied ahead, and this was just kind of like just kind of getting your toe in the water as to how crummy the product was going to become over the next few years.
Thoughts on Kane and RVD as a team? Was it embarrassing them for them to be on Heat for WrestleMania after being kind of the main two of the main guys in 02? And then I got one other question based on this, but go ahead, answer those.
I don't know if it was embarrassing for them. I'm sure it was embarrassing when they got their WrestleMania payoffs and then how them just being on Heat affected their wallets. But as far as anything, I mean, you look at these two guys and they're still doing it today. So I don't think anything affected those two guys greatly. It was come to work, do your job, have fun, go home. So.
Do you remember Willie the Worker?
Yeah, that was a pseudonym, an online thing on a message board, right?
It was, yeah, PW Insider. This guy would like send emails or blog posts in, and they'd run them. Any idea who it was? There were rumors that it was RVD at the time. Because it seemed like someone inside.
Yeah, I don't remember. I was outside when this was going on. And no, I don't. I remember reading them and thinking that, yeah, this had to be somebody on the inside.
And it was someone that was like bitching about Mania. So that's why it seemed like it was maybe one of those guys in the Heat match. So either him or like Lance Storm, one of those. Seemed like those are the two kind of pegged guys that it could have been.
But I don't see Rob caring. I don't see Rob caring enough about anything to get upset. You know? I've rarely heard him speak an ill word about anything.
Yeah, maybe it fits Storm's profile more after seeing his progression post-career, very active online, very outspoken about the product. I mean, maybe it was him.
But he would have been, he's always good friends with Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, so he would have done it there.
Look, I don't know. I'm trying. Kane?
I know.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't just try and think some of the names of the time. Maybe it wasn't someone inside. Maybe it was someone screwing everyone over.
It was good. It had everybody talking for a minute.
Goldberg. Panic move? Or was he expected to come all along? And was Rock the right guy to be his first feud?
Yeah, I thought so. Panic move? No, I thought, again, now that we'd kind of cleared the decks of everybody else, and Sting obviously would have been the real plum, you know, to get. They were still able to get Goldberg, which was great, fantastic. I think by this point, like, he had stopped getting a check. And then once he stopped getting a check from Turner, okay, now I can go to work for Vince, you know. We'll see how that goes. And, yeah, didn't go so well.
So we got a few more coming up here that you're already gone for, but try and get your take anyway. Because I know you were probably still a little bit connected, maybe just a little. Were Cole and Taz now the official voices of WWE in your mind? Were JR and King starting to get played out? Because to me, they fit this era more. Especially the feel of SmackDown with the more legit athletic style. I thought they were really locked in. I thought Cole was doing a great job feeding Taz, setting him up for that analyst role. And I thought Taz was hitting home runs left and right with his commentary.
I thought they were the best team of the time. But SmackDown did always have that B-show stigma to it. But it was the best wrestling show on television at the time. And they did things that... And I always thought, you know, there were things that were done on SmackDown that's like, I don't think Vince watches this show. I don't think Vince, like, approves of this. Because this is like wrestling. And they must have different people in the truck. I have no idea. Because Kevin Dunn can't be just sitting there and saying, hooray, wrestling. Come to find out that he hated every second of that. And hated all the wrestling and hated all the wrestlers. So, there you go. But Cole and Taz were very good.
What a fascinating company.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Really
and
is.
Despite all of that, which is all true, I might exaggerate slightly just for the just because we're talking, but I'm telling you, that's the mindset. And for that company, with all of that going against them in that industry, to have that level of success is mind-blowing. It'd be like you get up every day and you work for the McDonald's Corporation, and one side of the room is vegetarian, and the other side will only eat chicken, and nowhere in the middle is there an appreciation for the hamburger, but yet that's what they do.
One guy who probably ate a lot of hamburgers was Kevin Nash. No,
Quadzilla.
What were your thoughts on him as top contender, considering how awful he looked? Was it a poor choice? It's because he's Triple H's friend. That's why.
It was that the reason why he was the choice, Scott?
No, I'm saying that's what you're probably going to say. Right?
Why would you think I would say that?
Because that's he true. Is. Yeah.
Because it was true?
No. What was, considering how awful he looked, was it a poor choice to make him a top contender?
What do you think?
This isn't a job interview. Just answer the fucking question.
Of course it was a terrible choice.
Yeah, it's awful. The lasting image to me is him hobbling slowly to the ring for that save, and all the heels have to stand there watching him come down for 20 minutes. And then they go to Backlash, and he's teaming with Michaels and Booker that are working circles around him, and he's the one that gets the shine in the end and gets the push the next month for the championship. And then you got him, you got 70-year-old Ric Flair in there as like the fourth best worker in the match, and the two guys in the title feud, Triple H and Nash, are dragging that match down. And then Booker's the most over guy in the match, working his ass off. He's the most buried. His ass backwards at this point. His ass backwards.
Right. When did he fall down?
That was the year before. This is he's back now.
That was when he popped his quad.
Damn it. I thought we were going to relive that moment in time.
We can.
No.
I'm running out. I popped my quad. Do you remember that Backlash spot? I don't know if you were watching at this point, if you were just completely checked out. Big Show swings Rey Mysterio on the like flat board from the stretcher into the ring post, and then just lets him fall flat on his face.
Yeah, that was oof.
Awful. One of my least favorite bumps in wrestling history is watching that again.
That was like, reckless. Oh, remember when they threw Rey Mysterio into the Nitro truck? Remember that? Let's do that. Oh, we could do that here with Big Show. Yeah. Oh, except his hands will be tied.
Awful.
Whoops.
So dangerous. And it made Big Show look like a real dick, even though, you know, I'm sure it wasn't his decision. Something he could have vetoed, though. It made him look like a real bastard, like in real life, not just on TV.
Not a storyline bastard.
Boy, and they wonder why Ray doesn't want to come back.
Jesus, that was just brutal. All right, so talk about your release, Kev, if you want to take a couple minutes there.
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned you don't really completely remember your immediate future. Would you ever go back as well?
No. God, no.
So if they came to you right now and said, Kevin, we really want you to be our lead announcer. Michael Cole's done. He's leaving, going back to CNN. We know you're doing a great job at Ring of Honor. Woo. We know you could sell our stories. We know you could put over our product. Come back home, Kev. Come back to where you didn't get struck by the explosions. Come back to where we used to call you Hermie. Come back to where you were unceremoniously kicked to the curb. We want you to come home.
And Triple H will be your boss.
Come on, buddy. I'll even pay for your tanning bed.
How about my liposuction? Can I have that too?
All of it. Your hair plugs. You name it.
Triple H will give you the cat and the Oreos.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I would not go back. See, and part of the reason is because I didn't know what I was going to do when I left WWE, because all I had ever really been was a wrestling announcer. So it took me a while to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And what I realized after 11 months of putting out the same resume from the day I got home, like I got home, got fired on the day of the Shock and Awe campaign, March 23rd, was home by noon, right? And they treated me nicely when I started, and they treated me nicely on my way out. Palma Brax was the HR person. She was great, you know, almost apologetic, but I saw it coming, and I knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of time. And so anyway, I started thinking on the drive home, well, what am I going to do? Well, the first call I'm going to make is to TNA, but I doubt they're going to hire me because they don't have any money. I called. Guess what? They didn't have any money, but keep me in mind. Okay, thanks, Jeff. Then, all right, what do? Well, let's start looking on Monster. Let's quickly create a resume. Oh, great, wrestling. That's all I've done. I'm doomed. And it took me 11 months to kind of figure out that if I tweak my resume and highlight the fact that what I really done was a lot of sales, now I've got something. And I widened that and widening out the job search. I went from having no interviews and no phone calls really in 11 months to getting 5 in a week. And it was all just because I kind of changed the perspective of my resume and started a career in sales and have done various sales jobs, ones that have led on to the next opportunity, sort of building on the past. And now I'm in a position to where I'm in a company with an ESOP. I'm going to have retirement. Wrestling's never going to give that to me. It's a great side job. If Ring of Honor went away tomorrow, I'd be fine. No, under no circumstances would I ever leave and go back to the WWE, because they could turn right around. They hire me on Monday and they fire me on Tuesday saying, we heard you on the Place to Be Nation, go screw yourself. And now I've lost my job with the ESOP and I've lost out on the WWE. So no, thank you.
Overall memories of your run from beginning to end, your favorite matches, your favorite angles, just your overall memories of your time there.
Wow. One of my, you know, it was I was always frustrated when I was there, because I always felt like I was about to get fired, but I always felt like if I worked a little harder, or if I tried a little harder, or if I did something else, I could impress them that I'm, you know, the Stuart Smalley, good enough, you know, nice enough, and doggone it, people like me. You know, it was one of those deals, to paraphrase what he said. It was very frustrating, kind of like always having that kind of feeling. But I was able to do a lot of good work out of it. I was very proud of what we did on the magazines. I was very proud of what we did on WWE.com. Bite This Show was a groundbreaking show. We were able to do a lot of stuff. Dr. Tom was my favorite co-host. I had a bunch of them. He's going to be the guest on Kevin Kelly Show next week. Cheap plug. Got to call Raw live. First main event was Shawn Michaels versus Yokozuna. Yoko's last match in the WWF, Wheeling, West Virginia. Ring of Honor will be back there on September 27th for a national television taping. So that was kind of cool. And had a lot of great memories along the way, met a lot of good people, had a lot of fun times. Marriage almost fell apart, was a real jerk for a while. got fired, got saved, came back to life, figured out what I wanted to do, and now in 2014, 11 years later, I'm pretty darn happy. So that's a summation.
But what was your favorite match? No, that's fine. So,
If I had to say one favorite match, it involved Chris Benoit. But the favorite match, my favorite match during my entire time in the WWE was Regal versus Benoit from the Pillman Show, 2001.
Mm.
So. Kev, that so with your firing brings an end to the tales you'll tell here. Of course, like we said, you started back in episode 142. We're now on episode 333. So that was the first time you joined us. Episode 142. We talked about the 11/4/96 Raw. That was with the Brian Pillman gun angle. That was the original reason we had you on, was just really to talk about that. We ended up talking more about the end of 96. And that was on July 11th, 2012 was your first time on with us. You came back later 30 episodes, and about 3 months later on October 29th for episode 172, we did the first half of 1997, and then you came back six episodes later, a month later, and we did the rest of that. We finished with Montreal. December 26th, 2012, the day after Christmas we had you on, episode 184, that was your open forum where we kind of went through your history as a wrestling fan, your career. John Walters came on and almost pretty much tanked the show single-handedly.
Did I get holiday pay for that?
No.
Holiday bonus, something? No?
You almost got us all shit-canned because John came on, you went on for this crazy, stupid rant about gun control and everything else for a half hour. Miraculously enough, we had you back on seven episodes later for 191 on January 16th. And then episode 203 on March 4th, we covered the 1998 WWF. Episode 211, you were on with your buddy Joe Dombrowski, April 1st, 2013, to preview Ring of Honor's big show right before WrestleMania weekend. And we talked to Joe about his promotion that he had going on in the Montreal Theory DVD. So we then did 1999 on May 13th and July 1st, episodes 221 and 233. Episode 250 and 262, that was September 4th, October 16th, we did 2000. Episode 278 was 2001, part 1, December 18th, 13. And then you came on around along with Steve Corino for his interview on the show on episode 296, January 13th of this year is when you announced the debut of the Kevin Kelly Show,
woo!
Which debuted on January 22nd, 2014. And Kev, we haven't missed one yet every other week.
That's right.
We have done that. We'll be on episode, was it 18 next week, I think?
Yes, I think you're right.
On pace for 26 for the year, so that'll be every other week. Episode 298, you finished 2001 on March 13th. You were with us again on May 22nd and July 30th, episodes 313 and 324 for 2002. And, of course, you wrapped up here with 03. So almost 200 episodes worth that we've known you. Over 2 years we've been doing this, amazingly enough. I think there was, what, five or six cancellations, a couple no-shows, but now you're in the mix. You got the Yeti. You sound great. No more phone, garbled interviews. You've come a long way, kid.
The most amazing thing to me is, like, I've asked on a couple of occasions, really, people enjoy when I come on. They get some value out of this because I think I make no sense half the time.
They love it
because it's like cookie crunching in the background.
Yes, I don't know. Now I'm starving again.
I don't know how we're gonna. I don't know how we're gonna replace it because it's always been one of our cornerstones for a long time. I mean, that's a lot of 2 years worth of having you on every 6 to 8 weeks or so. So we'll definitely miss it, but thankfully you can still be heard on your own show there at PlayStation.com.
And Kev, you'll always be the answer to a trivia question. Who was on the Place to Be podcast the night of Hurricane Sandy?
Yes.
Ah, that's right. You got to try to get like Josh Matthews now.
Well, no, you have to find your replacement. That's how it works. You're leaving. You need to hire a replacement. So. I'd love to get the coach. I feel like he'd be good. But he's too big for us now.
Coach would never do it in a million years.
I know. He's so
good. I don't think Josh Matthews would. He's kind of a jerk.
I disagree. I think Coach would do it.
Well, you would know Scott, not Kevin, so.
I met Coach. I didn't work with Coach.
He's a sweetheart of a guy. He really is. He's a sweet guy.
And he talks. Why would you think he wouldn't come on, Kev? Because he doesn't want to talk about wrestling anymore?
I think.
I think he would talk wrestling. I think it's that he's too nice. I think he'd want to keep everything. I don't think he'd come on here and want to talk like backstage kind of stuff.
He wouldn't say anything bad about anybody. That's for sure. He'd have some good stories. mostly involving gambling and drinking. I think because he works for the worldwide leader, I think that probably would preclude some of his involvement. Now, you could probably get a one-off with him. You could have him on once. But I don't know how much time he'd get. I don't know if it'd be all that good. But it would be interesting for the fans if he'd be willing to do it. But I think somebody like Josh Matthews, who was there, he was basically there under me when I started. And
he just got released a couple of months ago.
So. Yeah, he sat right next to me out in the trailers when we worked there in the modular
buildings.
All right,
Kevin, get on it. Reach out to him.
I don't know him.
Tell him this is what you've been doing, and he'd be cool to pick up in your shoes.
We'll talk about the job at TNA he's not going to get. Whoops.
How about you get us like Farouk?
What the hell is he going to do?
You can talk about his career.
No, we need someone, for a one-off.
I'll give you the idea about, okay, Ron, wrestling's over for him, right? He's going to be an agent. So they gave him a clipboard, and they said, here, Ron, what we want you to do is write down the time when everybody gets here. If anybody gets here late, we're going to fine them. So he sat there. Okay, thanks. So he's basically a security guard now, right? Well, he figures out that if he writes down a time that somebody shows up as being late and he reports back to the office and then that particular wrestler gets fired, then he is a stooge. So Ron writes down whatever call time is. Let's say it was 2 o'clock. He wrote down next to everybody's name on the list, 2 p.m., He hands the list in. Johnny Ace or whoever it was looks at the list. You expect me to believe that everyone got here at the same time, 2 o'clock, and he basically was reported to have said, that's what it says. So that was his one and only time as an agent in the company. He, again, would be a great guest. You would get a lot of good stories out of him. But it could span the globe, man. You get the wide world of sports with him. You don't know what you're going to get, but it's awesome. He's a great man and has seen a lot and has done a lot. Think about him. He was one of the highest recruited Division I athletes ever. Turned a small Florida State program and made it a national power. So, and he did it basically single handed. So, very, very interesting man. Josh Matthews is a great candidate, though.
All right. Well, we'll work on that. We'll try and find someone. We'll put you to work. Start looking it up. Thank you, Kevin, for all the time you've donated free of charge. Our fans appreciate it. We appreciate it. And, of course, we can, again, hear you every other Wednesday at PlaySummation.com. Dr. Tom Pritchard will be on next week's episode. Scott, we will be back on Monday. And I think we got, a live watch going on?
I believe tonight we're supposed to premiere what our live watch is going to be.
It's going to be WCW Monday Nitro.
What?
Yeah, we're going to have Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and Glenn Butler in the house. We're going to watch the September 4th and September 11th, 95 episodes of Nitro. So that's Monday night. So join us then, and then join us next Wednesday for episodes 18 of Kevin Kelly's Show and the main event. So for Kevin and Scott, I am Justin. Kev, for the final time, thank you and goodbye.
So do I at least get a lava lamp out of the deal?
You get your box. It's by the door. See you later. The Kevin Kelly Show now becomes the Josh Matthews Show. Every other Wednesday, please be
son of a bitch!
You're out of here!
Is this because I made fun of Scott?
Becomes the Jeff Jones Show.
Nope. The Scott Steiner Show, since you love him so much.
The Jeff Jones Show will never make air.
It'll never get done. So take the photographs and still frames in your mind. Hanging on a shelf in good health and good time. Tattoos and memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the while. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life. We'll be right back.
predictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life.